Welcome to the Lean Health Tech Podcast, where industry professionals discuss trends and topics where efficiency, healthcare, and technology meet. My name is Taryn Shipley, and I'm your host. Our guest speaker today is Dr. Brian Fine. Brian is the founder of Percentric, which gives healthcare entities a web-based SMS access point with integrated EMR functionality so patients can text with providers. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
It's my pleasure, Taryn. Good morning.
Today's topic is let them text, which Dr. Fine, that's kind of your catchphrase. You post frequently on LinkedIn and you give all these examples of healthcare situations where the patients just text with the issue. Tell me more about what you do when you say let them text. What exactly does that look like?
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory. It is sort of just repurposing an existing ubiquitous communication tool that for some reason has been ignored and marginalized by healthcare. You know, common sense suggests that this is a way to solve a lot of basic healthcare issues. There's this whole ill-defined space of healthcare uncertainty sort of in between Google and the doctor's office where people, they just need a little bit of help. It doesn't need to be some big ordeal, which almost every sort of healthcare encounter is, certainly any in-person sort of setting. And so we've just tried to take it from its very core. This is how doctors communicate with other doctors about their own healthcare. Hey, buddy, can you help me out? We've just brought it to the table as something that regular patients can use.
So you mentioned that not many healthcare providers or systems allow texting. I guess the obvious barrier would be HIPAA, right? So what you've designed is HIPAA compliant?
HIPAA compliance is deeply overused sword that prevents innovation as far as what it's intended for, the scope, standing of HIPAA. So the bottom line is that we consent through HIPAA. People are entitled to receive their healthcare information however they choose. HIPAA wasn't really designed to address doctor-patient direct interaction. It was more for third-party communications, transmission of information, financial information, that sort of thing. At the end of the day, we have a secure, static environment where the medical records are kept, but the actual texting itself, we get consent, and that's never been a problem. If people don't want to consent, that's fine. It doesn't ever happen, but if they don't want to consent, then they can just use their regular healthcare environment.
So there is a separate EMR that's separate from the texting platform, correct? But do you document the conversation that happened in text? Do you kind of leave a note in the EMR so there's a summary for future reference?
So actually what I've built, so I have my medical practice is, you know, I go to businesses and for a fee, I am available to all of their employees and family members. So that's my medical practice. And then as part of that model, we built the software. So somewhat separately, we have it housed in a separate organization, separate corporate structure. We built the software so that the texting that I would do with Taryn when she texts me, hey, doc, I have a question. On Taryn's end, it just looks like regular texting, the same way she would text family and friends, regular SMS. And then on our end, it's integrated into the medical record. So the software platform that we've built brings together the texting feature as well as the electronic medical record feature.
Some organizations are now starting to charge for in-basket messages to providers. What are your thoughts around that?
It's so hard from an asynchronous sense to sort of define what is appropriate communication. How do you monetize it? How do you be respectful of both the patient and the provider? The idea that it would, you know, people would be charged per text, per character, it's silly. I mean, the way people text, whether they staccato text with short answers, how are you supposed to do that? I think the environment that you're talking about is probably more email, portal model, web mail, more than texting. But I wouldn't say that a per text engagement or remuneration policy would work very well at all. I don't think it's sustainable.
What are the limitations to texting? Because I know certain clinical conditions, obviously, you need to have hands or eyes on the patient.
When Taryn is dealing with a medical issue, she is, and this is almost uniformly by definition, she is the initial medical decision maker with no medical background potentially, right? Maybe not Taryn specifically, but like with no medical background, they have to decide when they're sitting on their couch, we have to decide, is this chest pain something that's an emergency? Is this urinary burning something that I have to worry about? This headache? There's always this first step where a decision has to be made on severity. So the model that we've built is I ask people, listen, text me if you don't think it's an emergency and we'll try and help you. Obviously, you know, the disclaimers are, if this is an emergency, please go somewhere. But a lot of times people, right, they don't know if it's an emergency. You're trying to give them access to someone to help make a decision. So I believe that providing that access almost universally is a net positive. And I encourage people, if you don't think it's an emergency, then text me and hopefully we can solve it.
It's almost like a form of triage for office visits. Do you really need to come in or can we do this in text first?
The existing model doesn't necessarily incentivize, I don't fault providers for this. There's a model that exists. They have to make a living. They have to figure this out. But there's no incentive really to keep Taryn home because we get paid when she comes in. I mean, there's some evolution, value-based care, and some of those sorts of things. We're not properly incentivized, which is fair. That's human nature, to keep Taryn home. So yeah, this is it's a triage system in many ways. I mean, the medicine by definition is not difficult medicine. And depending on the model that you set up, I've obviously got a particular business model associated with it. You get to, you know, define the scope, help a lot of people with a lot of things a lot of the time, but there's certainly going to be a subset of things like, oh, this is a little too complex, or you probably need to go somewhere. I don't even consider it a failure, to be honest with you, Taryn. There have been people where I'm texting with them and I don't hear from them for a minute, and then I text them and they tell me they went to urgent care. I'm like, that's fine. Like, I'll still follow up with you, because a lot of urgent care visits wind up, still don't know the answer. They're still figuring it out. So we still follow up with the patients. Hey, did you get the antibiotic that you needed that they prescribed? We're all just trying to get to the same end here. And this is part of the solution, I'm certain.
It almost sounds like a version of direct primary care. Would you consider yourself in DPC?
I would not, for a few different reasons. Part of it's the business model. We don't go direct to consumer right now. I have some one-offs here and there that I work with, but it's more of a employer solution, employer-based solution. We're not primary care because of the model that I have. I'm not a fan. I mean, you could argue both sides potentially, but providing primary care through an employer, depending on the environment, the local sort of primary care environment, what happens if the relationship with the clinical provider like myself, what if that goes away? You know, everybody loses their primary care doctor. So if they leave the job, they lose their primary. So we're more about, listen, let's get you your primary care. Let's fit you into your local system. Let me encourage you to find primary care. Probably the majority of people, I mean, they want primary care, but they can't get in for 3 months, 6 months. Somebody leaves town, dies, retires, and you're left. This is across the socioeconomic spectrum, though, you know, disproportionately maybe in one direction, but finding primary care is hard. We've created this demand without being able to support the supply of providers. And so I help until they can get where they need to go, and we support them and, you know, with refills or just basic healthcare until they can make that appointment 7 months from now with their in-network provider. Yeah. So we haven't sort of tried to jump into the primary care space.
I want to talk about the benefits to the employer. Like, what's the benefit for an employer engaging with you? Do their employees miss fewer days of work, fewer time, you know, less time off because they don't have to go to the doctor during the day? They can just text you.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. So the value proposition, you know, when I first started doing this, I harped a lot on the healthcare cost angle. I think that's tricky. I think there are some scenarios where you can materially affect healthcare costs. Oftentimes, it's sort of a one-off situation. You come into an environment where the benefits have something and you fix it. Obviously, there's a pharmacy space, there's some opportunity in some of the larger employers, but it's hard. Healthcare costs, the nature of insurance, Taryn, is a long-term bet that the current model of insurance coverage doesn't support. People don't stay at their job for the 15 years that it takes to do the actuarial outcome of colonoscopies, let's say, because doing that screening and paying $1,000 for that colonoscopy, the insurance company that does that ostensibly to prevent cancer, like they're not the insurance company necessarily that's going to have to deal with it down the road. So there's this disconnect. We certainly can help with healthcare costs. But equally, if not more important, is it's just an amazing common sense thing that patients love. They absolutely stay at work. They're more productive. Presenteeism goes up. You can recruit on it. You have a doctor on staff. You're actually taking care of your people. You're creating this access point for a whole world of medical engagement that people simply don't have right now, unless they have someone living in their house with them that's a medical professional. You're doing the right thing. And with the evolution of higher deductible health plans, and then the nature, sort of the fractional nature of medicine, where you go to an urgent care, if something goes wrong, you got to go to the urgent care again in a day or two. Like, it's just nonsense. Employees, I mean, they love it. We add a little special sauce to the whole thing too, certainly from a medical perspective, because I would argue that just offering employees text access isn't itself sufficient. So we also do periodic on-site visits. So we get to know the employees. So they have essentially a doc in their pocket. Someone is sort of a dedicated point of contact for the company. And so now the employees, they know who they're texting. They're texting Dr. Fine, they're texting Dr. Babington, they're texting somebody that they know. And that's part of the purpose of the on-site visits. There's this clinical part too, where you can capture some things when you see people and create an opportunity for them to do some sort of consultative engagement in person. But you're also creating this fist pump, kiss babies, like, hey, I'm just a regular guy like you, regular gal like you. Let's treat medicine like human beings and have conversations, and we'll just figure out as much as we can.
You mentioned earlier that you supported not only the employees, but also their family members. So, a parent, for example, they wouldn't need to take time out of their business day to take their child to the office. They could just, let's say, text you a picture of a rash or something that their kid had. Is that right?
That is correct.
Do you typically work with smaller organizations or larger organizations?
And people ask, like, what's your ideal client? We have clients as small as 20 employees up to 1,000 employees. And I tell, like, the fully insured, self-insured industry, like, there's all these. And my response after doing this for a bunch of years is all it needs to be is somebody in a position, in a leadership position, who truly wants to take care of their employees, who wants to offer them a real healthcare solution. Again, not for everybody all the time for everything, but a real sort of delightful healthcare solution in an environment where those really don't exist. Any CFO, CEO, HR director who is looking for some genuine game changer, it doesn't solve other problems. The system is still there that people will have to navigate. But this frontline solution, human solution, can be used with any company. We set up a pricing model, marry the on-site and the asynchronous component, and try and build lasting relationships with our clients.
Do you think this model will continue growing?
So we're working to grow it ourselves. There's not a lot of people doing this model, in part for finding the providers, the provider model. There's some regulatory considerations that we feel confident in that space, that we've got a solution. I'm on this hill to die on it potentially. I've bet a lot of my life on this just common sense idea that makes sense to everybody. And the only barriers are these sort of self-created ones That even the people who make those decisions, they would want to text their doctor if they don't already. Like, so there's like this inherent hypocrisy to any sort of naysayer. So I hope so, because it works. There's certainly a movement in the asynchronous space with Amazon and others. I would propose that we're a few steps ahead of that in what we're trying to accomplish, but I think the crisis of healthcare itself is hopefully increasing opportunities for innovative solutions that won't get too watered down.
When you go into an office visit, there's like a CPT code that you bill. Do you still drop the same, like the similar CPT codes, but then the organization pays a flat fee? Do you charge insurance? How does that work?
I don't charge patients anything. It is a no-cost service that's provided by their employer. I don't bill anybody anything. I don't submit CPT codes. I don't interact with insurance. This allows me to be a lean business person. We don't do 24/7, Taryn. Business considerations and the quality of care that you try and provide when you're doing this sort of shift work model where you think any provider is the same, which is not. The scope of care that we have and the way you build expectations with your employees and your patients is that I'm a human being, right? I got kids, I got a life. My job is to make you feel good and to solve your problem. This model, when you go through employers, it's interesting because you get a more mutually respectful interaction with patients because they come to the table feeling like it's a benefit. They don't feel like it's entitlement. It's not something on their list of the insurance says, oh, you get access to this provider. And so if they call and they don't get in quick enough, or they pay a copay and they don't get the antibiotic that they think they need, instead, you're able to have a more seamless sort of longitudinal conversation. People are more inclined to be open to suggestions because they know that they're going to be able to contact you the next day or the next day. Like, you can pivot very easily. And so it's worked out very well. And then, I mean, people don't abuse it. I love what I do. There's not a lot of sort of 50-year-old doctors who love what they do. I feel like I help people. And again, this is basic. This is very basic medicine. This is not high-level stuff. I never thought I'd be doing something like this, but this is where the gap is. This is where the need is.
Do you like what you do? Because I know so many physicians and just clinicians in general have issues with burnout because it is such, the healthcare system is so complex. There are so many, to your point, unnecessary barriers and hurdles, which may or may not be self-inflicted, but you seem like you love what you do and you're very fulfilled, like you're making a difference. You don't regret going to medical school and becoming a physician. You'd do it again. Is that right?
Oh, that's like a whole can of worms, to be honest with you. I don't know the answer to that latter question, whether I would do it again. I don't know what I'll tell my kids. Getting here to this space where I am, turmoil, personal space, greatly affected my life. There's a shift away from the traditional medical dissatisfiers to the traditional entrepreneurial challenges and dissatisfiers. So I wouldn't say it's for everybody. I love very much the medicine that I can do now. I've created this little silo. I know that's a little bit of a four-letter word, or it is a four-letter word, but people think that's a negative, but I've created almost a self-contained silo where I can help people and I can poke holes in it and reach out and direct people as needed to the best way they can go. But not everything needs to be something very complicated. The majority of people are pretty healthy. You don't need a 40-page medical record to get at their issue. They'll answer questions honestly and reliably. The actual practice of medicine has been very rewarding. And we are, looking to figure out ways to grow it. It takes a certain kind of physician or provider to do this, both from like a risk approach with practicing medicine this way, and then a sort of a human approach to leaving the system, being, a quack or whatever you want to call it. I love what I do. And I'm glad I was able to marry a pretty aggressive entrepreneurial spirit with healthcare, because I don't think there's a lot of doctors who can do that or who have been able to do it.
Do you have only physicians on your team, or do you also employ APPs?
I do with some extenders, just now starting to incorporate them. Given the interest that we've had in the model, I've actually slipped back more acutely into growth mode, scale mode. Pulled in a few new clients this year. And so we're building out the team and building out additional providers. Its current iteration is essentially a sole practitioner, but I've got a nurse practitioner and a physician assistant who are staffed on helping me with some clinical care and as well with the policies and procedures.
So you're open to growth because I know some of my listeners are clinicians looking to exit the traditional clinical space into something a little bit different, maybe like what you have going on here. So would you be open to those folks? Maybe they can comment on the podcast link or reach out to you.
Yeah, anybody could do it. Like I posted, like this is, it's incredibly challenging, I might say, because of the, you build it, the risk you take, but it's very simple in concept. If you have a medical license and I mean, shucks, a medical license, 2 feet and a cell phone, you can tell somebody some advice and they can pay you. Like people forget that, like with the whole complexity of the system, at the end of the day, you're an expert like anybody else. You're a professional like anybody else. Any doctor right now, as a side gig, when Aunt Mary asks a question about healthcare and texts you, if you wanted to say to them, okay, here it is, here's my answer, here's my thought, hey, how about you give me $5? You can do that. So I've just built with that premise and said, I'm going to build this thing that any doctor could start yesterday. Most of them do it already, they just do it for free.
Do you have any last words or comments for listeners about maybe employers that would be interested in hiring you for something like this, or clinicians who might want to join your team?
I would say please reach out. My LinkedIn profile. I mean, I'm not a prodigious poster, but it's a fair representation of my ideologies and my mission and what I believe. So, any employer who really just wants to explore, I'm certainly not a seasoned professional salesperson, but any employers who just want to learn more or see how it would or wouldn't fit. And I mean, there's other people I know sort of in this space who I'm happy to make introductions to. This whole sort of innovative clinician-led sprint that seems to be happening, which is pretty cool. And then any clinicians, I mean, just reach out. I've had people reached out, and I'll talk to them and get a sense of where their dissatisfaction lies and how I can help. And if there's tools or some of the collateral that I've built that can help them, I'm happy to share and collaborate.
Thank you so much for sharing your insight around letting patients text. This concludes today's Lean Health Tech podcast. If you're a listener and would like to hear a certain topic covered in future episodes, please let me know by leaving a review or comment. Thanks for joining, and be sure to check out the next episode.